Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm incredibly excited.
Why are you excited, Rob?
Well, it feels like night at the museum because we have just come to the Royal Academy.
Yes.
And it's nighttime and all the public have just left.
Yes. Do you know what? I was walking into the RA while the public were leaving and it's just turned like dark. We're into November and there's an Anthony Gormley baby that everyone's taking pictures of before they leave. And I suddenly looked up at this building and thought, I flipping love the RA. It's magical. And the history that's been on here and the artists that have come through here and are currently training here and the shows that have been here, it's historical and special and it's ours.
You can almost feel the ghosts walking through the corridors. It's like icons of art.
I love
and
ghost
today,
icons.
We are going to walk through an exhibition.
Yeah, how lucky are we? So all the people have left. This is like the hot show at the minute. It just literally opened. How long ago did it open?
Last week.
Last week. There we go. And we're here now to walk around with an incredibly special mate of mine, mate of ours, mate of Talk Art. An incredibly special person who's going to give us the best insight into this artist's
life.
And
our guest today is an incredible artist. Yeah. And he also studied with a friend of ours. And yeah. I love his own artwork. And actually, I was saying to him just before we came in that this whole part of his life, because he spent 20 years working with the artist we're walking through the exhibition of, yeah. but I've never actually discussed with him before because I've always been interested in his own art and also his beautiful photographs and in him. But I'm so excited because I came to see the show yesterday for a bit of research. And no, I'm not exaggerating now when I say this is one of the greatest shows I've ever been to.
Oh my God, Rob.
And because I love self-portraiture anyway,
yeah.
but this artist,
of yourself.
He is just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the way these paintings are made, these drawings, everything, yeah. it's one of the best shows I've
it's
ever seen.
It's a historical.
And our guest figure. Today curated this show.
Yes.
So we would like to welcome to Talk Art,
David Dawson.
Hi, guys.
Hi,
how you doing,
David?
I'm okay.
So we're here for the Lucian Freud, the self-portrait show.
Yeah.
Which you curated.
Yeah.
And you?
Long time in the making.
Long time in the making. So let's just tell everyone your role in Lucian Freud's life. You came into Lucian's life
around 1990. I just graduated from the Royal College in the painting school, and I was asked if I wanted to have a part-time job with an art dealer 3 mornings a week, and it was James Kirkman who was Lucian's dealer. So I was the sort of the lad that would go and buy the paint and the canvases, and so I met Lucian and we got on immediately. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be living in Notting Hill, his studio, and where he lived was in Holland Park. Mm-hmm. And he'd phoned me from that day on, and it just grew to 20 years later.
So what was that first meeting like? Did you
phenomenal for me. I mean,
in what way?
In that he was, so his studio and his apartment on the fifth floor of one of those big
Georgian townhouse.
Yeah, in Holland Park. So you
he climb, had the whole house there.
No,
he?
No. He just had he just had the top flat.
Oh, I see.
So you know you're climbing, you're running up the stairs. And he appears at the top, and he's just this very bright, for me, very friendly, very warm character,
yeah.
piercing blue eyes,
yeah.
And it was two or three visits after that that he finally took me into the studio.
And was he working, like, literally painting when you met him?
Yeah, yeah, but he'd always, in the, his apartment, in the flat, he'd have every door closed. He never, every door you went in and out, he'd close the door behind you.
Was that a studio thing or just...
No, it was just his little thing. So the studio was always had the door closed.
Yeah, because when you were his assistant, you wouldn't sit in there with the person he was painting. It would just be them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the third visit, he said, I'd come into the studio.
So do you think he was looking for an assistant?
I don't know. He just liked me. I don't know what it was. It clicked. Anyway, when he did open the door into the studio, the thing I saw was a big painting on the easel. It was of Lee Bowery, that naked man.
Yeah, the standing one.
And so that was the first painting I saw, and it just blew me away. It was the most remarkable piece of art that was being made that had ever... come across. I mean, it really physically hit me in the stomach. You know, it was staggeringly good.
So you obviously met Lee Bowery.
Yeah. Well, I knew Lee anyway because I used to go out to all the clubs. I used to be at Taboo and stuff.
Oh, of course.
So
you.
I knew Lee as when he was like
a performer.
Crazy. Yeah, yeah. And then I didn't know Lee in his day life when he looked like a Benny Hill character.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, because he had like really shaved hair.
Well, then he'd put a funny wig on at a jaunty angle.
Yeah, that's right.
and wear a day drag, didn't he?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And a funny and a sort of gabardine overcoat.
He lost all of that for the sittings, didn't he? He kind of like stripped himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was his idea to be naked, not.
Right. He wanted to be naked.
Yeah, yeah. It came about. Lucy met him through Kerith Wyn Evans.
Yes.
And then. He,
who's an artist, yeah.
Yeah. Lucy went to the kitchen to use the phone, and Lee was in the studio. When he came back into the studio, Lee had stripped off. So it was Lee's idea. He obviously had the idea to be completely naked. So Lucy just picked up a piece of chart and got on with it. And that's how things would work with Lucy, in a sense. He didn't really want to direct. He wanted the sitter to feel
comfortable.
Well, to be themselves. Wow. So
but Lee must have been aware that Lucien's style was painting a lot of nudes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, Lee had worked it out for himself, hadn't he?
He knew.
And he knew what he wanted and how he wanted to be portrayed.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was amazing.
I mean, he was quite, from the paintings, quite well endowed, so I'm sure he wasn't shy to get naked.
No, he loved getting his dick out.
But also, he'd used his body like as a material in a way.
Yeah.
So he must have loved what Lucien was doing and wanted to be remembered, because he must have also realised, even though at that point, I don't think Lucien's prices were the millions that they then went on to be. That sort of happened a bit later, didn't it?
Yeah.
But he must have recognised that Lucien was this incredible force in art.
And would
outlive all of us. Do you know what I mean? Like when we're all long gone, that's what I feel about this show.
How aware were
he will be remembered
of Lucien's work before you started working with him?
I was very aware of it, but I wasn't. I was sort of looking more at New York artists at the time.
Right.
But when I, you know, so I wasn't, in a sense, you know, really wanting to sort of paint like Lucien.
Yeah.
Which
Who
helped
was you looking
me.
At, like Clifford Steele and.
No. It was more, you know, this was mid to late 80s. So what was hot, and Julian Schnabel and Eric Fischel and David Salley. I mean, that was the sort of buzz in New York.
Yeah.
So I was sort of planning on heading that way. But seriously, when I walked into the studio, it was the most powerful moment of, like, all the hairs stand on you.
Really?
Yeah, it was like, this is what art is. It's really serious. And it's got nothing to do with anything. But, you know, it's got nothing to do with markets and it's got nothing to do with hype. It's got nothing to do with building a reputation. It's just really good painting. And it's very, very, just very serious. And it's a sense of purpose in it, which really I felt very emotionally.
You felt palpable. Like,
the
story that he was telling, you wanted to listen to.
And be part,
Be a part of,
Be a part of it.
I mean, but you talking about that feeling when you met him. You now live in the house that Lucien left you. Bequeathed to you. And you have kept his studio space intact, like a shrine, kind of.
I don't want it to be a shrine. I do use it, but it's not my main studio. I kept my old house, and that is my main studio.
Right.
But I work in Lucien's studio, but I am aware it was his studio. Yeah, so there's a certain amount of...
When I walked into that studio when we went to your house, I had the feeling of, this is crazy, this is history, literally. You talking about ghosts of the RA. That was literally like, there are still his pen marks on the wall where he made notes and scribbled things down.
Yeah.
There's still where he tested the paint. You can see
No, it's a work, but it's a working, still. Yeah, it's a working room. But Lucien wouldn't want it to become, you know, museum. It's the paintings that.
I remember you saying that because I went around your house on my own and you showed me the studio, and I remember you saying something like the reason why you hadn't opened it up as a museum to the public was because he was so private.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, of all people, having spent 20 years every single day of the week, because Lucien, for the people listening who don't know this, Lucien painted Monday to Sunday, so there was no time he wasn't painting.
Yeah.
And incredibly punctual, started in the morning, did day paintings, and then at nighttime did night paintings under electric light. And there's this complete dedication where he literally dedicated his life to painting.
Yeah.
And that must have meant that, therefore, the people around him, you were a very close, intimate, close-knit kind of circle, and it was very private.
Exactly. And privacy was a sort of, he regarded as a quality of life, and it's important. And I think it gives you if you're an artist, and especially Lucien, who's the way he worked, you needed that space to have your freedom to be able to paint.
Yeah.
You've got to have an inner life in you, really, to be able to do that sort of that amount of work. So you need to protect yourself.
Yeah.
So for you, was it? So you worked with him for 20 years,
yeah,
and you quickly fell into the role of being like studio assistant to the artist, and then studio manager.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're not. Yeah, the names sound a bit false in a way, but yeah, I was just around every day, and I'd make sure that. I could work it out very, very early on that this was Lucien. Lucien was 69 when I met him, and I could see that he was really going to go for it in the next, you know, this, you know, the jump in scale of the paintings.
Right.
He really wanted to push it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I know how I can make your life easier. I can organize everything, and you just get on and paint. And that's what the dynamic of it was between us.
What was that like for you, though, making that decision to sort of... commit yourself to his...
I thought he was worth it. I really thought the work he was doing was of such high quality that it was a very special moment. And I really thought... I mean, I continued painting throughout being with Lucien, just that I put him first, which, as for a contemporary artist, is the wrong way around. But I thought he was worth it, and I was learning from him.
I've been thinking a lot about it, and I know your work in a way better than I knew Lucien's, because for some reason I never really looked at Bacon or Lucien that much until recently. I've recently got really interested in them. Mm. And I know your work really well. And I was thinking about, I heard that you used to paint at nighttime, and a lot of the subject matter in your work, in your own work, is like from the house, and it might be out of a window where, you know, look down a street, a cul-de-sac, so kind of suburban, but also Welsh landscapes and clouds and things like that. But I suddenly realised why someone would want to be that close to someone like Lucien Freud, having seen the show, because the way he used colour and paint and texture, and you must learn so much, and you're not going to learn that from anybody else, like on this level, because there was no one else like him. I mean, it's such a unique way he painted.
Can you feel him in your work?
No, because you have to find your own voice and your own language. Mm. But he's around.
He's around. Because
I don't, you know, you
figuration doesn't appear in your work.
No, but it's the attitude or how you approach the work is what I learned more than anything, and the sort of discipline of work, and the commitment into being honest to yourself and honest to your feelings. These are the things I get from him, not how things look.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, in this exhibition that you've curated here, we're currently in the first room.
Was this your idea, by the way?
Yes. Oh, yes. So, this came about, this exhibition, because... So, the last 10 years, decade of Lucien's life, he was having museum shows all around the world every other year. And I was saying, God, one day, Lucien, I really want to do your self-portrait show. I think it'd be a really tight, small-ish exhibition. He's like, okay, yeah, that sounds all right, but do it when I'm not around. And it would make sense for Lucien. This wouldn't really work for Lucien if he was alive.
Because of his reclusive quality?
Yeah.
This is too much like...
It's all about him, and it would be the wrong message in a sense, because it's not... It is all about him, but it's 7 decades of work here. It's better to see it now that the art is what that matters.
Yeah.
Lucien didn't want to have a personality that was at the front. He wanted his paintings. Yeah. He wanted to be anonymous, and the paintings... carry the life, which is what's happening now.
And there's a word that I kept thinking of yesterday, which gets so overused now, but these works are so intense, and they have such a precision and intensity and focus, like his own life. You know, he dedicated himself daily to painting, and he sort of, you know, surrendered his own life in many ways to, you know, to have the ability to become the greatest painter
he could.
He was
a nun for his craft.
Well, But I love these early portraits. So from 1940, there are Incom paper works right at the start of the show.
Yeah.
And you get this complete youthful kind of energy of a young man. He was incredibly, I think he had quite a beautiful face and a great face for painting. Yeah. It's not necessarily a traditional, you know, not like a model's face, but he had such great quirks in his face. And I think from the minute he starts to draw, you can see just what amazing
They're also, in a sense, self-taught, his drawings.
Right.
Academia was played no part in his life at all. And so he found his way of drawing and then onto painting from within himself. He couldn't or wouldn't feel anybody could teach him how to do that. He did go to Cedric Morris's school in Suffolk, and Cedric Morris really did insist on the sort of individuality of things. Well, Lucien really did take hold of that.
Mm. Wait, so who was Cedric Morris?
But it was a school, a very progressive art school in the 40s.
Right.
Cedric Morris was a Welsh painter, rather good painter, but he's... it was just an independent school that,
but high quality.
I think that's why Lucien liked it. I mean, it was probably quirky. I mean, it wasn't. You know, he didn't like Goldsmiths or Central St. Martin's because of the sort of pomposity of the teachers, and he thought they were all a bit ridiculous. Whereas he something with Cedric Morris's school where it was about the personality and the individuality of someone shines through, and that's what.
And actually, I think even in these early works, you really feel the idea of psychology and this kind of self-analysis and also
it's in his blood, isn't it? Sigmund.
Oh, yeah, psychoanalysis, But also, like, the idea of touch and sense to psychology somehow. So in this work here, Man with a Feather, the idea of that feather, you know, you can think about dropping the feather and it falling down in the wind or how it might touch on your skin if you were going to touch, you know, with the feather. Mm. I just find that work so captivating.
And also his very early work, you know, surrealism was very much part of the of what was happening in the art movements of the time. Yeah.
Magritte and Dali.
He very much rejected.
This is very Magritte, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, the feather comes from Lorna Wishart, which was his first serious girlfriend, gave him the white feather. Some people interpret these as icebergs because he'd just been, he went to the Merchant Navy and went over to Nova Scotia, and he painted this when he got back, and he was raging on about how amazing the icebergs were. These possibly could be icebergs.
Wow. Amazing.
But it is rather exciting that, you know, surrealism does come. The idea of what surrealism is, it's about the subconscious and the unconscious, which is exactly what Sigmund Freud, you know, put into words and his ideas articulated. Yeah, so surrealism came out of his grandfather. But Lucien rejected surrealism for feeling that doctrines and rules were to be broken. He did not any rule and he wanted to go the opposite way.
He was a rule breaker.
Yeah.
He was a rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, from very early on, decided that he would get all his information only from looking, and to learn how to look, and not have make the art not from preconceived ideas, but trust your eyes and trust your feeling.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, this is an early drawing.
This 48. Is called Startled Man Self-Portrait. I mean, it's an extraordinary. How old would he have been at this point?
24. 25. Extraordinary drawing.
That was one of the works yesterday when I walked in here. I was just totally struck by, and there's something about that energy and the youthfulness of it. I don't know, it's just...
Yeah. So, I mean, you can see already that his commitment into believing in the work, it really does stand out.
The way the hair is forming, the way the hair folds is very similar to his paint technique, which he carried on through.
Yeah. So from these early days on, you know, where he committed to, right, I'm only going to get my information from looking. And it's from looking that you break down all your preconceived ideas and you trust your eyes and you trust your emotion as to how you edit that. And it stayed with him then for the, yeah. you know, throughout the whole of his...
And you've kept that yourself as an artist with your landscapes, because you like to be plein air outside.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, like yeah, I react. Yeah, and react and respond to it. That's just what... It's the spark that gets you going for me.
Do you ever work from photographs?
No, it's the wrong information. And Lucien could never work from photographs.
Well, so, I thought he said he could once, but only once he'd had a sitter there for a long time.
Yeah, but then he wouldn't really... I mean, there's one or two little paintings that he did from a photograph, but not really. Whereas, I mean, that, but that's beside the point. You know, someone like Francis Bacon, who only worked from photographs. Jenny Saville only works from photographs. It's beside the point how you reach the finished painting. Yeah.
And you grew up in Wales, didn't you?
Yeah.
And so some of the paintings I've loved most are of Wales, of like landscapes and things, because my mum is Welsh and my dad was Welsh.
Yeah.
So I have a real, I don't know, affinity. It reminds me of growing up and visiting Wales and going to like Abergavenny or going to Tenby and Swansea and different places and seeing the landscapes there and even the Gower, which I love. So Do you often go there still? And
I do. I go back up there. It's my I thought the core of my work was going to be about where I come from, and those teenage years, I think, are your formative years for everyone. And my patch was this part of rural Wales in mid Wales, very remote part of the world. But it's my that's what I come from, and there's a sense of connection that I feel with the place. Well, it's a very one-sided. relationship, because nature is completely indifferent to anything of that. But we have emotional attachments to it. Definitely. I have an emotional attachment to that patch of land that I know very, very, very well. And that's, for me, the very start and the core of all my work. It comes from that point.
I've got a technical question then. So everything here is more or less private collection.
Yeah.
So how complicated or easy is it to get collectors or museums to loan these works?
It's some are easy, some are difficult, and some are nigh impossible. But on the whole, we've done a pretty good job and got pretty much
people refuse.
One or two.
But really?
Yeah. But I don't even think about those because they're not here, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But it's if it's private property. If somebody doesn't want to lend, there's nothing you can do about it. Disappointing. But
certain works aren't allowed to be photographed either.
No.
And is that mainly because they're drawings on paper, or is it
partly?
Because
and it's partly because it's requested by the owner.
Interesting. Yeah.
But it doesn't help to have drawings, especially photographed.
No, of course.
But what Lucien was very, very good at, and these are still in the very early part of his life, is using a narrative, making drawings from a narrative. So they're, you know, this is Actian, so from Dan and Actian. These are all graphic, in a sense, they're graphic drawings for a book illustration.
Okay.
But he was commissioned for?
Oh, yes, yeah. Okay. He put his self-portrait into the narrative, so he used himself. So it's a different way of using the idea of the self-portrait.
It's a selfie.
He's
the original selfie.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I like that ear poking out underneath the antlers. That's self-portrait as...
can you see yourself in there?
How did you say the word Actian?
Actian, yeah.
Dan Actian, 1949.
You know, there's one of the great paintings that Titian did that's at the National Gallery.
Diana and Actian.
Yeah. You know, that Lucien's very much publicly supported for the nation to buy.
Yes.
You know, we share it between Edinburgh and London.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I weirdly think happened at a kind of time when we first started
Titian saved the Titians
at the National Gallery.
Yeah, Tracy was involved in that, wasn't
exactly,
she?
Exactly, yeah.
So
yeah.
Talking about Tracy Emin, who is all of our mutual friend.
You
were at Art College with
Tracy.
Yeah,
we were put together at the Royal College in the same studio.
What was that like? Did you just like click straight away like
and Lucien? Yeah, we did actually, and we still do today.
Do you?
Yeah. The one thing I can say about Tracy is that... I recognise in Tracy is her sense of honesty and truth-telling. I recognise it because Lucien, in his way, was completely about an attitude to truth-telling and an honesty. Mm. And he cut all the crap away and get to the... And that's what I recognise in Tracy. Two very different artists.
And did you feel that at the time when you were studying together? Did you think that, like, raw...
Yeah, well, you see, I knew Tracy before I met Lucien. So it's a longer friendship.
And did Tracy meet Lucien through?
Yeah.
Wow.
Lucien liked her. Lucien thought Lucien said, oh, she's got really good manners, which coming from Lucien means a much different thing than a younger generation. It means she, you know...
Class.
No, it's nothing to do with that. It's more that she held herself. She was contained.
Right. So you started working... What year did you actually start working with Lucien?
I think 91, I think.
And what year did Lucien...
I don't know, I don't look at my dates, but yeah, yes.
What year did Lucien buy you Eli the Whippet?
That's a good question. 2000.
2000. And did you know...
For Christmas.
So...
Buy a dog for Christmas.
Yes. Dog is not just for Christmas, but for life. But
yeah, you only buy a dog at Christmas if it goes to a loving home. He must have known you would be a loving owner.
I collected him Christmas Eve. It's genius.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Where from?
Dorset.
So Eli has appeared in... How many... So you've sat for Lucien 9 times, is that correct?
8, yeah.
We were discussing it just before.
I can't remember. My sums are hopeless.
Yeah,
I think
well,
there are 7
media,
paintings.
Some people say 7.
Right.
And then he sometimes says 6 or 7 or 8. So I was like, what's the 8th? Because I've seen 7 paintings. And actually the 8th is an etching. Which he sat for separately. So
and
8 times.
But Eli the Whippet has appeared in most of your...
There's
cities.
3 or 4. And then there's Pluto, Eli's great aunt. Another Whippet.
And Lucien had hawks as well. So there's a lot of animals in his work. So he, when he was younger, he had 2 hawks, didn't he?
Yeah.
He used to take out and about with him.
Yeah. But that you realise then, in the 50s and 60s, you just go, everyone had animals. I mean, you go to pet shops, you buy whatever you wanted. You go to Harrods and buy a lion.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Wow. Wow.
So there's this, the pet shop is still open. It's in Camden, on Camden High Street. That's the pet store.
Where you
still
bought
there.
The Whippets from?
No. Where the,
hawks
and buzzards and whatever else he had.
Wow.
Yeah. It's only recently that everybody has changed their...
Puppy farming and stuff, isn't it? It's all like fearful of where your animals come from.
And actually, around that time when you got the dog, is when you started photographing Lucien as well, no? Because I think you'd been working together about 9 years before you started taking pictures.
I took a photograph of Lucien with David Hockney. And as I pressed, because this was film, days of film, I pressed the shutter and Lucien walked through the door. So I didn't know Lucien was in the photograph until I developed the film.
Oh, wow.
And then Lucien saw the photo and said, oh, wow, that's a great... And it was Lucien that pushed it out. So after that, I had my camera with me and I was a little bit more confident maybe in using the camera more and more. But from very early on, I made a very quick decision that I was never going to run home and write down what, you know, take notes.
Keep a diary,
I never, ever kept a diary. I wanted the friendship to be real and the friendship something that was for me and him and respect it. So I never kept... So the photographs came about as a little bit of a visual diary.
But I think you feel your trust, the trust that he had with you and that you had for him, and the intimacy in those photographs, which is also... You've also got a great eye, obviously, when you're taking pictures, because you're a painter yourself.
Exactly, that is
quite... But they are very painterly, actually, the pictures of him with his, you know, shaving.
But that's me going around first thing in the morning, and I'd sit while he was having a shave, telling him the gossip of what happened the night before. And he'd shave with his paintbrush every day. And he'd never use a mirror. He hated. He didn't have mirrors like that. I mean, every single painting here has been made by looking in a mirror.
Yeah.
But in the bathroom, there was never a mirror.
And for the listeners, you can actually see one of David's pictures as you walk into the exhibition. They've done a reproduction on the wall with the wall text.
Yeah.
So, but I really recommend everyone look at David's pictures because they are truly incredible.
Did you ever feel like when you were like getting called up or going in, like, oh, I can't be bothered today?
Sometimes, you would do it, you know, because it's every day.
Yeah.
But... Not often. On the whole, it was remarkable. It was remarkable what he was doing. And he was, you know, pushing as hard as he could. Well, it sort of drives you on as well.
Mm. Did you meet a lot of his family members? Did they pop around
all the time? Yeah. Well, you'd meet, you know, since you would meet people, yeah.
I read that he had a kind of like estranged relationship with his kids, but the way that they would spend a lot of time together is if they sat for him.
Yeah, if they sat for him, then they all had a very good a friendship through painting.
Right.
Lucien put his painting first, and he never ever apologized for that.
Wow. And did you ever feel like there was a sadness or like an anger about that from family members that are like, what about us?
Possibly, but I wasn't really interested. I mean, I was there as... I mean, it was the art that I really wanted to concentrate on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know... I didn't want to get too caught up. I mean, it wasn't for me to get caught up in that side of things anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't your business.
No,
yeah.
Okay.
So talking of family relationships, there's a painting in this room there of the hotel bedroom.
Bedroom with his second wife, Caroline Blackwood.
And that is just an extraordinary painting.
Amazing. I mean, it really is so tense in... I mean, it's the marriage did not survive. And you can feel it in this painting, I think.
How many marriages did he have?
Two.
So this was the second marriage. And after that, he didn't marry ever again.
No.
But he had a lot of dalliances.
Yes.
That you had to...
No, it's his life, nothing to do with me.
I almost see your connection with him, though, as a kind of relationship.
It was
because I feel like you were probably one of the longest, because it was like 20
No,
years.
It was just that it was consistent around the studio. It was... My friendship with Lisa was only around... the painting
yes.
and art and being in the studio.
Yeah.
So it's consistent because he painted every single day.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast, and we're here today with Budweiser beer, and we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art. with Sir Peter Blake.
How many paintings would he be doing at once?
About four or five. So he'd have two going in the day and two at night.
And they would all have sitters.
Yeah.
So people would be on their routine of what time they would come.
Yeah.
And how would you organise a studio for each sitting? Because they were obviously in different locations.
Yeah, so I'd run around and you'd put marks on the floor and you'd run around.
I love that. Around the chairs.
Because
The paint floor was completely splattered in paint. Yeah. But I love the fact you would know which dots
you'd get really
where the
good
chair
at,
had to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then your job would be to go in and reposition it for
everything,
the next sitter.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, well, it's hardly taxing, is it?
No, I know, but it's just getting your mind around the fact that session's over. Who would decide that session's over, Lucien, or would it be on a timer?
No. It would be a natural timer in that he'd start very early in the morning and then work through to lunchtime and possibly work a little bit after lunch. But he'd always rest in the afternoons and then start a night picture under electric light in the evenings at 6 o'clock. So that would run through to midnight or something.
And would his sitters ever get frustrated at having to sit for so long? Did you ever go into a weird trance?
No, you'd give you time to daydream,
which
is nice. It's a bit of a luxury, I think. He was just the most amazing company. So, and he's...
Would you be talking throughout then?
Some of it.
Right.
Not always. It was natural ebbs and flows, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of concentrating, and then you just go quiet. But he was the most non-judgmental person I've ever met. So
really?
It was very liberating in that... He was totally unsentimental. Well, that's liberating.
Yeah.
And he would listen to you. He was a conversationalist. He wanted to hear what you had to say. So in a very adult, you know, he'd take what you said seriously. So he treated you with the greatest respect. Well, it's rather nice, isn't it?
Did you ever feel
it?
Like he was looking at you like more than, because he's studying you, like he wanted to paint you? Did you feel that vibe?
Yes, if you're the sitter, if you're the one being painted, then the concentration on you goes up times 10. Like you're the most important person in his life.
For that time?
Yeah.
And then
you just switch it off when the painting's finished.
Realize, wow. Okay, you can go now, bye.
Yeah.
Really? Was it as cold, like cut and
it
dry
can
as
be,
there?
It can be. I mean, I was always around, so I never... felt it because I was always there the next day for doing the studio work. But for some, it might have been quite a strong sort of cut at the end of a painting.
So what was it like the first time he asked you to sit
with him? I'd known him for 6 years before he asked.
Wow. So and was you hoping and praying? Was
yeah,
it something
well, not praying.
For?
I don't pray, but I was hoping.
Well, yes, parenthesis praying.
Yes, I was hoping that one day he might ask, and he did. He just came out and said, oh, I've got an idea for a big, big canvas. Would you mind sitting?
And did you sit naked for this?
So I said, clothed or unclothed? He went, naked. So I went, yeah, all right.
What did that feel
well,
like?
Well, you're a bit embarrassed.
Yes.
First 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you just get used to it. I mean, it's very private. The studios, like as I said earlier, the studio door is always closed.
Yeah, it's not a live feed on Instagram, is it?
And it's a very private, safe world. And you're doing it, you're taking your clothes off for a reason, which is for a painting. There's a reason behind it.
I've always thought people who sit nude are actually really brave. But then you're right, because when we see the paintings finished in a museum, there's loads of people looking at them.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like, wow, that person was brave. But you're right. I guess if you've got an intimate connection with somebody, if you don't,
well,
if it's
it is
just
different
in a studio.
It is different when you do then see the finished painting in the gallery, in a museum. You do feel naked.
Right. Do you? You feel exposed when you see...
When you see yourself. You're like, oh, okay. I don't hang around.
I remember seeing you at Tate Britain when I'd seen your nude by Lucien.
Okay.
I saw you about 10 minutes later at the opening of whatever show it was.
That was a recent show.
A recent
show. Britain.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember you being a bit sheepish. I was a bit like, I'd just seen you completely
because
naked.
Because it must feel weird that people have you hanging in a museum or in their front room, you with your bits out.
Yeah. what can one say?
So if we go back to this painting, this is one of the paintings that I found the most incredible. A lot because of the way he uses light in this painting. Like if you look at him in the
world, called Hotel Bedroom 1954, and it's an oil on canvas,
and it's in Paris.
Yeah. What I really want to point out is that those earlier works, which are linear with this incredible talent of drawing with through line. These paintings now become more, there's more volume in the, you know, they're becoming more three-dimensional in a way. And this, in a sense, is the sort of final painting of that very finely painted work. The right. brushes change from here on.
And that was because of Francis Bacon?
Yes, because Caroline and Lucien knew, had met Francis, and knew Francis by now, and then for the next 15 years, Lucien saw them. He saw him every single day.
So you knew Francis Bacon?
I didn't know. I'm just seeing him later.
So did you ever meet him?
No, because they'd fallen out by the time.
Yeah, what is that? So they had a hate-love friendship? Rivalry or...?
A little bit of everything. I mean, a few little things happened that, you know, Francis really wanted a painting, borrow a painting back, and Lucien didn't lend it. And...
Oh, the painting that's in Lucien's collection?
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't they lend it back to Francis?
Because Lucien needed it in his life and said there's nothing more depressing than a nail in a wall. Looking at a nail in the wall.
And in a way, that's a big compliment to Bacon.
Yeah, but Bacon
also it's also like saying, like, no, you're not.
But I think Lucien feels that Francis went off slightly towards the end of his painting career.
Okay.
Well, an artist would pick that up.
Right.
And you think Francis was aware that Lucien had that impression of him towards the end?
Maybe.
Oh, and that's the falling out, because he didn't want to be...
And it's then hurtful, Lucien was coming up more and more. You know, there is rivalry between artists. Yeah, it always is.
Did you ever hang out with Frank Auerbach?
Yeah. Frank would always come around. Lucien thought a great, very, very close to Frank. And from every painting, as it was nearly completed, he'd always ask Frank round to have a look.
Really?
What, to critique?
Yeah. Every.
And did he ever say, like, not into this one,
Lucien? And he'd always... Again, I would leave them in the studio on their own because it was their friendship. But, you know, Lucien would tell me afterwards that, oh, he didn't think the head was on the shoulder quite right. Or he would have another look at it and see if there's something he's missed.
Wow. And do you speak to Frank now still? Or?
No, he's very private, Frank, and he just does his very... You know, he's more extreme than Lucien with painting. That, you know, he paints his three sitters at these allocated times each day.
The whole of their lives they've been his sitter.
Yeah, and he doesn't move away from that. So I haven't seen Frank for over a year.
And how about was an influence on you, though?
For the
on, city, your, like, on your own work?
Like the ones of, like, Mornington Crescent, his drawings and paintings like the street scenes.
Yeah.
Because you painted the street scenes
Yeah. He's there. I mean, he's one of... For British art, Frank's one of the greats, isn't he?
Indeed, yeah.
And again, it is that, you know... repetitively obsessive and observational and going back and back and back to the same. I mean, Frank takes it to the max.
Yeah, he's hardcore.
He is hardcore.
I don't think people are aware he's still alive, to be honest.
Yeah, no, he is, and still painting.
Wow, he must be in his 90s now, surely, right?
Nearly, not quite, but nearly.
So something about this room that really struck me is this, the kind of psychological intensity of it all, but also, again, the touch, like she's touching her face.
Eyes.
And the eyes, yeah.
I think
you know what it is?
Personality, though.
In a lot of painting, when you see figurative painting, I often don't necessarily feel something. But when I look at his work, I almost feel how upset she is or how what he feels, you know, because there's obviously some complex thing going on. Mm. And maybe it's like her, how she sees him almost. There's some very...
The dialogue, you can just hear the dialogue.
Well, he never doesn't give you answers in any of the paintings, but there is an awful lot of empathy and an awful lot of affinity, I think, with the sitter.
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes through, isn't it? He's not giving you answers and he's not giving you self-knowledge. It's just looking, and if you're open and honest to yourself and open to what is there, something surprising will come out of it.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But these three paintings here, I think, show very clearly that the influence of Francis Bacon, you know, when Francis was very much talking about painting what he feels and putting it all into one loaded brush mark,
mm-hmm.
well, it's Lucien working it out for himself,
right.
how he's going to do it.
These
so he changes.
All painted, 1963.
Yeah, and that's the first time we've got them back together again.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it all from separate collections?
Yeah, that one on the left.
It's called Man's Head, these self-portraits.
That one lives at the National Portrait Gallery. That's at the Whitworth in Manchester. And that third one's a private collection, and that never gets lent.
Do you ever take yourself off places to go and see his work in situ?
Sometimes, not... I mean, if they're in certain collections, if I know who the collectors are, then they invite me around.
Yeah.
But
what do you sort of feel when you see these paintings?
I really, really like coming across them again because I don't get to see them. I only get to see them like when you guys do now.
Right.
It's brilliant to come be with them again.
I think one of the other things I love, the overarching kind of theme of the show somehow, is a life. And I was thinking a lot about my father when I was in this whole exhibition, because my dad died a few years ago. Yeah. And I was thinking about how you see photographs of when my dad was younger and I was a kid, and then remembering him as his body was failing on him.
Yeah.
And that's what I really took away from this show, is like how we are all, you know, on this kind of passage of life. And it was these particular paintings
time,
that you mentioned,
yeah.
passing of time, exactly. And these particular paintings inspired by Bacon really started to make me feel that.
Yeah,
it was almost like the midpoint of the show.
Yeah.
And then the bruised eye,
yeah.
and that idea of like, you know, it's obviously there's a story behind it.
It's
of
a self-portrait with a black eye, 1978.
And I think he had an altercation with a taxi driver.
Exactly.
But for me, it wasn't even about that narrative. It's about that kind of way your body can change and swell. And, you know, you might have illness or you might have, you know, and in paint, it's just the best kind of...
You can see how Jenny Savile was completely inspired by these works, because hers is about, like, the bruising and the
swelling.
And I look at Sue Tilly, who sat for him. What was the title of those works?
Benefit supervisor, resting.
Are there any paintings in the show that you have never seen in the flesh yourself?
I'd never seen that one before.
Really?
No.
Wow.
I knew...
Man's head.
And that's got a do not photograph sign next to it. That's a special one.
Right.
Man's head, self-portrait 2, 1963, that is.
But I do think you can't... There's something so special about paint that to represent the human body in the way that he paints.
Like, it's about... Yes, and it's just about... existing and breathing and a life.
Yeah.
It's not got a political angle to it. It hasn't got... It's just about what it is to be part of, you know, have a life.
I've got an incredible quote here that I don't want to get wrong that I read that just really struck a chord with me. That someone asked him, why do you always paint women and men, or why the women always straight women and why the men always gay men? And he said, I'm drawn to women by nature and to queers because of their courage.
Yeah.
What is that? That's like such an incredible.
Well, remember,
for someone of that generation.
Well, quite, and also, you know, where it was illegal to be gay.
Yeah.
I mean, Francis Bacon was horrified when it was made legal because he thought it was much more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, that's like Quentin Crisp as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, they thought it much more exciting to be queer and it being illegal.
Yeah, be underground.
Yeah. He found it.
But what an amazing thing for Lucian Freud, a man of his generation and age, to.
But that's the thing. Lucian was really interested in people, and he was really, really interested in everyone's life being its own life. He didn't want to direct it, or he just wanted everyone to be themselves. And that's what. So he was the most humanist. You know, they're real portraits of the 20th century.
Yeah. And I think in this room, we're now in a room which is a lot about the mirror and him looking into mirrors as he paints himself, so kind of the reflection in a mirror.
Yeah.
But you also, like you're talking about history here, you think of like Dürer, or like there's so many classic paintings
Dürer,
that you can kind of see in this foliage in Interior with a Plant, which is a kind of pot plant that must sit with him in the studio. Do you remember this work?
No, it's before my time, but I know this painting very, very well.
Yeah.
But again, he did have plants. You know, it's like having animals around. He didn't fuss or make the animals behave in a certain way. He just wanted them to exist and be their own thing. And it's the same with plants in the studio.
Would you look after the plants?
Not
would that be your role?
Or somebody would. But they were just there. You'd water them when they looked like they really needed it leave them do their thing. Never trim them, never, you know. But it's rather nice, you know, and he's... Again, it's like in there, there's the sense of touch with Caroline touching her cheek.
Yes.
And he's in a small painting, has his finger near his lips.
Yes.
And here is the sense of, you know, he's listening.
He's listening, yeah.
And he told a really close friend who had been... She'd gone travelling for a few months, and that was him waiting for the doorbell to ring.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
I also love this idea of almost like captivity somehow. Like as a painter, he kind of didn't obviously go out much.
No.
And then apart from at nighttime, but how the company he would spend a lot of time with would be these pot plants.
Yeah.
And somehow they are alive and living
and green. Exactly.
And
exactly.
I found
that's
it
what,
so meaningful
that's what, yeah.
because of that.
Yeah.
I loved it.
He had real sensibility to everything having their own laws and their own, you know, life span.
And when I saw him with his hand to his ear, I also thought about the noises outside. Because
he must
have thought about the bustling street, you know, and the people talking and leading their own lives. And he's there dedicating himself to painting. It's just such a dedication.
They are. I mean, again, it's what I was saying earlier. He doesn't give you any answers. He just lets you...
Yeah, lets you imagine it, I guess. Yeah.
What does it feel like running his estate now? What does that feel like? You've got a huge responsibility.
No. Because what is, I mean, there isn't, you know, every painting that exists, he, you know, wanted them to exist, because we had a really tight edit all the time that if there's things he didn't like, we'd physically cut them up.
Because he destroyed lots of his
work. He destroyed things, yeah, yeah. So everything that's out in the world is
what he wanted.
What he wanted. And they all live in either museums or in people's collections. So the estate isn't really there. All I do is I manage the copyright.
Yeah.
So I can sort of influence what exhibitions happen.
And why was he so happy to leave some unfinished? Why did he feel like...
Sometimes it was that they went so well that he felt, oh, I can't... How can I go on with it? It's just come together so quickly, so well, and he leaves it.
It's quite a good example here with these two paintings, because one he didn't finish deliberately. Yeah.
And I don't know which came first.
Right.
Like, it wouldn't work in the sense that that's a preparatory sketch for that.
Right.
This one lives at the Thyssen in Madrid.
I love that image as well of him kind of like looking down in the mirror. Yeah. And he's this very imposing father figure with these two children and the...
Yeah, two of his own children.
Lower left-hand side.
He always had this Egyptian book around in his studio the whole time.
Right.
And I don't know if it's just Lisa making a painting come to life, but I don't know if it is because of, like, with Egyptian art where they're flat surface.
Yeah.
And they're sort of run along. You read them as a flat surface.
Yeah.
Or whether it's just that it's just Lucian making a painting come alive.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I think I heard one of his children say that she wasn't even sure if it was meant to be like necessarily a portrait of them. It was more a way to finish the painting or something the painting required.
Yeah, exactly.
And she didn't even mind that. I think.
Yeah. It's what the painting.
Really fascinating.
Yeah.
So what's happening with David Dawson now? What's the life of David Dawson like now? This show has been opened. How's your art going?
Good.
Yeah. So what's coming up for you?
I'm in conversation. I have one or two people that come to look at my paintings and the gallerists, and they talk very constructively and critically in a good way.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at.
I also found it interesting when Lucian died, he left you the house and the studio and everything. It was almost like he was saying to you, like, now is your time.
Exactly.
Because you'd given up so much of yourself and also learnt for so long.
Yeah.
And then now it was your time to do it.
Yeah.
And luckily you've got his discipline.
I've got the second half of my life. I can go for it, which I am doing.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, no, it's
so we ask every guest that comes on, David, two questions, very, very hard, tough questions. The first one is, if you could perform an art heist, you could steal any work of art in the world legally,
ooh,
and you could keep it with you,
ooh,
what would that be and why?
Oh, I wish you'd give me a bit of warning on that.
No warning.
Oh, there's too many to choose from.
Just give us a selection. What's the first thing that's pinging into your head?
Cézanne.
Which one?
Any of the Mont Saint-Victoire mountain.
Have you seen him in the flesh?
Yes.
Where did you see
Hang on. Oh, God, that's just too many good things to think about. Damn, I wish you'd give me 5 minutes notice.
That's great.
We can ask you the next question. You can still ponder this question.
Yeah.
The other question we ask everyone is... Yeah.
What is your favourite colour?
Oh, well, one colour doesn't work on its own. It needs to balance off to another one.
Good. But what's a selection of colours that
that's
you're
a
working
answer. That's a painter's answer.
Yeah. One colour on its own doesn't neutralises it, so it doesn't mean anything. It's when it comes in alive to another colour.
So a spectrum.
So the combination of colours and how they
talk to each other.
Yeah. Interesting. And actually, I love that. And these.
Bryce Marden's good at doing monochrome paintings.
Yes. But that's about the reaction of one colour to the other, so there would never be a solid...
I think maybe one or two...
They're graded with panels or...
I actually really like the nighttime paintings by Lucian for that exact reason, because I think the way that he uses different colours to create that energy of the fake light...
Yeah.
Just and that's him in there. That's still
his,
a self-portrait.
Yeah, it's his shadow.
His shadow.
Yeah. I brought this room in because I just felt it live... You know, it just changed the rhythm of the exhibition. So in that painting...
This in Dublin.
Yes.
Those
two little canvases leaning up against the wall in the painting are recognisably self-portraits.
Yeah.
And then in this portrait, the 2 feet in the top right-hand corner are Lucian's feet. And in this painting of his son, Freddie, there's Lucian reflecting in the night.
I love that. You see his hand painting.
Yeah.
And then his shadow in the painting of Flora with blue toenails, which is like such
a
brilliant
title. And I love the shadow
title.
Being, you know, it's just like, I see it as a shadow that's just disappearing. It's just there.
Yeah.
And he's given all the life to her.
To her, Because it's an incredibly vulnerable position in a way to be totally naked on a bed, but she feels very strong and powerful in that painting, I think.
And then we're now walking towards a full naked self-portrait of Lucian. with a palette and a brush, and is wearing two boots with no laces in.
Yeah.
And this was this one the ones, one of the only ones he's painted with his actual piece, like penis in view, or
yeah,
his
yeah.
naked body.
So, yeah, because he painted everyone else naked, but he only painted himself naked once.
Yeah,
all the self-portraits. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's another question I can't answer.
Okay,
it's probably quite a hard thing though to have to face yourself. And I
it
think,
is a remarkable. Also, I mean, I think that's one of the great paintings of the 20th century.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say. I think that will be there for.
And
forever.
Everyone thinks it's a much bigger painting in their mind, and then when they come
scale.
And see it, and then when they see it, it's oh, it's, I didn't know it was that small.
You're talking about the painting.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I'm screwed.
Russell.
What?
Yeah, and
oh,
then
this is phenomenal.
So.
This is the most powerful one from the
yeah the,
from the flyer. This is like the work.
This is that's midlife staring eyeballing
reflection self portrait 1985 life. Oil and canvas.
I love that painting actually. There's a painting here from 2002 which is a self portrait reflection, and he's almost like just becoming paint. You kind of see the background and
yes.
the wall is so like paint laden.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I don't remember it from even when we visited the studio or seen photographs of the studio. It's way heavier and thicker. Mm. But with his nose and his eyes and his forehead, it's almost like they're becoming one thing.
I know, it's fantastic.
It's an extraordinary painting.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, this show is just an absolute masterpiece in its curatorial sense. It's just an absolutely beautiful show. Do you feel incredibly proud?
Yes. But, you know, it's Lucien's done all the work.
Mm.
I just pulled it together. I knew the work very, very well, so I had a, I felt, I knew what it was I was looking for.
Mm.
So I knew, because, and that helped me, knowing the work really, really well, and then just getting people to help acquire them. And on the whole, we've done a pretty good job, I think.
Yes, incredible. How long is this show on for?
Till the end of January,
great.
And then it goes to Boston.
Oh, it's touring.
MFA in Boston.
Wow.
But it's a show I don't think that we'll ever do again.
Wow, right.
I mean, I don't really see it.
Yeah, so I really recommend
again, so.
Everyone listening, if you're in the UK or even if you want to travel to the UK, do make the effort. I think you have to get time tickets to see it, which is actually a great thing. It's
yeah.
a great device in a way because yeah. it means when you do go in, you don't just have crowds and crowds and
yes,
crowds of people.
Yes,
it's
yes.
very busy,
yeah.
but it's you do get space with the paintings.
Yeah.
And there is something so incredibly powerful about seeing so many self-portraits in this journey of a lifetime. And one of the things right at the end of his life was he was doing a portrait for 4 years of you with Eli, no?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got a few questions about that. One was how on earth did Eli manage to rest and chill there? Was he happy to do that?
Yeah, because he's done it all his life.
Ah.
Eli, since he was a puppy, has been a sitter for paintings.
Amazing.
So, and he, you know, whippets do like being close to you
right.
and lying, you know, so you give him a quick run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you just come in.
And
the studio is always really warm because, you know, you don't have any clothes on, so the studio
is
warm.
They kept it warm.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. But that's why all the doors are kept closed as well, I guess, to keep the warmth in.
Quiet.
So you were actually his last human
yeah,
subject.
Yeah,
and Eli was his last
yeah.
animal.
Where's
but,
that painting then that didn't get finished?
In the States, in
the
collection, yeah, in a collection in the US.
Maybe you should do a David Dawson show of the nine paintings, get them all, or the six, seven, or eight, whatever it is, get them all, and the etching, get them all together
yeah.
and do a show for you. Maybe we should organise that.
Okay.
Maybe we should be looking after your estate.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what does it? How do you feel about that last painting?
I haven't seen, I want to see it again. It was an amazing journey, taking, because it was, and then 2 weeks after he put his brush down, you know, he died. It was a very quiet ending in that
was
sense.
You there at the end?
Yeah.
Wow.
But he was at home, so it was fun, you know, it was as good as it can be. He did say, Lucien did say, oh God, it's such an inconvenience, this dying thing.
Did he?
It just gets in the way, doesn't it?
I read a quote somewhere that he was like, he wanted to be there at the end almost like
well,
painting.
He pretty much was.
And he pretty much was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a beautiful film that you made and also
yeah,
some
yeah.
photographs
yeah, yeah.
of the last day.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I didn't know it was the last day, but it was.
No, exactly, yeah. But it's an incredible
yeah, yeah, it is actually.
Short film.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it really captured that time in his life, but also your intimacy with
yeah.
him.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
you're chatting to each other. He's trying to put the painting easel up so it could go higher and it jams and David's chatting to him. And I just found it incredibly moving.
It's the thing, though, if you know, it's because he spent so many hours every single day of his life painting, it's the thing that stayed with him more than anything, right to the end.
Yeah.
And what is the remarkable about Lucien is that, you know, he did have a wild life, and it, you know, almost like he lived 10 lives in one life.
Yeah.
But from really early on, and you can see it in this exhibition, he always came back into the studio and did these very, very complete, closed paintings, portraits. They're complete in themselves.
Yeah.
Right from the very early, you know, that very early drawing.
Yeah.
And he did that all his life, but he'd also have this wild life out in London.
Well, I heard it described because it's almost like kind of athletic, the way you have to be able to paint for so many hours, all the way through the day. If you do day and
it's
night
good cardio.
Paintings, some artists must just get exhausted from doing, like, I don't know, 4 hours painting, let alone the hours he was doing. But then the adrenaline, I heard David actually compare it before to being an actor and to being on stage with that high you have after being on stage or a musician or something where you're performing. So at night time, he used to go out and he would gamble and he would, like, go to the Ivy or go to these restaurants. Did you used to go with him?
You used Mr. Wolseley every night, didn't you? Wolseley.
Yeah, Wolseley, yeah.
Which is opposite where we are now at the RA.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did he ever critique your work?
Well, he's this is his brilliance, that he would say so much, but not... It would be wrong for him to say too much, because then, as an artist, you'd be influenced by what he said.
Oh, interesting.
So he's... There's, you know, he's... The way he used his intelligence, I thought, was remarkable. So he would encourage, but not... over encourage and not over emphasize anything, because then it's false, isn't it? Because you would you'd end up
being swayed.
It's being swayed by what he says, and that's not what an artist is. Because you have to find it yourself.
Your own instincts with it,
And I think you feel the kind of emotional intelligence in him as a human in these works.
Yeah, oh, completely.
And that is
completely.
Probably what their greatest power is. Actually.
Yeah.
And I think I came away with a sense of him having way more empathy than the myth of him, because I never met him.
Yeah.
And I've always seen him as this very strong, you know, patriarchal kind of figure in painting or something.
Traditional, I guess.
In a way, all those things. But actually, having left this show, I feel that he was constantly questioning, constantly kind of interrogating not only painting, but himself, and also the way that he... through having to dedicate himself to his painting, affected and maybe hurt others, and that how that made him feel, and also how it made them feel. But it's a really complicated thing, and I left feeling with a much more sort of empathetic, I don't know what the word is, but I feel
I think
a kind of love for him, actually.
I think what he was asking himself all the way through from very early on was, is this plausible? Is this a plausible work of art? Is this, do I, you know? So it's about an attitude and a regard to his own work, asking those questions.
He liked his own work, didn't he?
Yes, but not... It's not quite what it's about if you're an artist. You don't... It's not about if you like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not it's plausible and if it's real to him and if it's got any merit that it will survive.
Have you taken that into your own work at all?
I hope so.
Yeah. Do you like your own work?
Yes, some of it. Mm-hmm. I certainly like the attitude I pull into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you can learn from.
Where can we see your work if we want to see your work?
Instagram at the moment.
Yeah, okay. And what is your Instagram?
That's a great place.
What is your Instagram? What is it?
David Eli Dawson.
Yes.
Awesome.
Amazing.
And what do you think success was for him, and what is success for you?
Success for him is trying to make the greatest painting he possibly could. And I'm pretty much, I'd like to, that rings true to me.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's keep it, you know, that's any artist that of interest, I think, it's about their work more than anything.
I think you feel that right at the end of the show with that painting of him with the easel naked in his boots in the studio, which was his home for such a long time. I think you
everything
feel that
stripped back.
He did it. I mean, that painting is a truly remarkable painting.
I think it is. I think it is one of the, I really do now think it is one of the great paintings of the 20th century.
Yeah, me too.
Amazing.
David Dawson,
thank you so much. Have you thought of that painting yet, though?
What is your art heist? If it wasn't Cezanne.
What's your touchstone artwork? Somewhere where you always, if you go to the country, you always make sure you see it.
Oh, it runs through many, always having books open, but Cezanne and de Kooning.
Yeah,
Are sort of there
all the
time.
You was looking at de Kooning's work when you was looking at the American artists.
Frank Auerbach, they're always around. And Lucien in the studio always had a couple of art books just open, just so they catch your eye. Mm-hmm. You don't sort of study them, mm-hmm. but it just reminds you what great art is.
Wow, it's like in the subconscious.
Yeah.
Peripheral.
And it's all the stuff
you've learned. Just reminds you, that's what really good painting is.
Interesting.
So it's a good tip to have a couple of art books open.
Have peripheral genius just there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, David, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you very much.
And for everyone listening, we'll be posting images of all the artworks we've discussed today. And of course, we didn't get to discuss every single artwork in this show, but we would love you to see it. And if not, if you don't get to travel here and see it, there is an amazing new book called Lucian Freud, The Self-Portraits, which is available from the Royal Academy, I think on their website as well, mm-hmm. Or their shop, which I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. And we will be back very soon.
Yes, big love.
Thanks for listening. Thank you, David.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.